All right, we're on chapters 25 and 26 of the book of Exodus as we're making our way through. We are starting into the tabernacle section as per our outline by Baxter. We have covered the Exodus, which is the theme of the book, and then we've covered the law section as per this outline, and now we're getting into the tabernacle itself. We're looking at the design of the tabernacle, the elements that make up the tabernacle, the furnishings. We'll see that it was delayed, and then we'll see it was completed, and that's the story we're going to end on. So let's review some of our chapters. We won't hit every one of these in interest of time, but chapter 1. Children of Israel are where? And they're suffering. Very good. Chapter 3. Chapter 2 is about Moses' birth. 3. Yeah, it's where Moses was called to deliver the people. Chapter 4 had to do with his trip. Chapter 5, his request to Pharaoh. 6 had to do with the assurance to Moses and Israel. So chapter 7 now. What's it about? All right, there's the first plague. And then there was the 3rd, 4th, and 5th, and the 5th, 6th, and 7th, and the 8th, and 9th, and then the announcement of the 10th. Chapter 12 is about what? Passover and the 10th plague. Then in chapter 13, first. And in chapter 14, the actual crossing of the Red Sea, the Exodus. That's the highlight of the book as far as the title of the book goes. That's not the only important thing. Chapter 15, because of that deliverance, what did they do? Celebrate. Here's a song of deliverance. Chapter 16 had to do with God doing something for them. Manna from heaven. Chapter 17, because they complained. They were given, yes, very good, water from the rock. Chapter 18 was Jethro's advice. They came to Mount Sinai. Commandments in chapter 20, the servants of property and violence, etc. And then there's the ratification of the law. At the end of chapter 24, what happened? Moses was called to come up on the mountain. And he was there for how long? All right, now what we have in chapter 25 for several chapters following is part of that 40 days. So don't get mixed up and think he's been up there for 40 days and 40 nights. That's over. This is new events. This is going on. This is the instruction God is giving while he's on the mount. When he comes off the mount, what chapter are we in? 32. 32, when he comes off the mount, that's where he sees the golden calf and throws the stones down, tablets of stone down. So he's not come off yet. So from here to chapter 32 is what God's telling him while he's on the mount. Make sense? All right. So let's get into chapter 25. Chapter 25, there are only chapters we're covering tonight. And so we're going to be looking at the offering and then the ark, the table of showbread and the lampstands. And then we'll get into the tabernacle itself in chapter 26. So we're going to spend a little time just talking about the features of the furnishings and the tabernacle, the size, to get a visual perspective. And we're going to talk about some parallels, some significance to that, because that's going to be important when we get further in the book. Not that we remember the exact size, but I want us to get a visual of the reality. That's the point I'm wanting you to see. Not just that you're going to remember 3 months from now. I remember the exact size of the ark. I remember the exact size of the table of the showbread. I have a general idea of the size of the lampstand, but that you get a vision of reality here. Does that make sense? All right. So let's get underway. What we have in verses 1 to 9 for the tabernacle. So let's see what takes place here. God tells him to go to the children of Israel, and they're going to give an offering. What do you learn from verse 2? This is going to be from the heart. This is a willing offering. This is not taxation. It's not that you're going to take a certain percentage from each person, as happens with taxation. and they are to pay this whatever percentage is, and so they're forced to pay. This is a willing offering that they're going to willingly give. And so there's something practical to learn as we look for those, that our sacrifice to the Lord ought to be willing and from the heart and not something that we feel like we're forced. But what are they to bring? Verse 3.
Gold, silver, bronze, blue, purple, scarlet yarns, goat's hair.
Ram skin, badger skin. We'll come back to badger in a moment, what that may or may not be. And acacia wood. Acacia wood is still prevalent today, able to purchase that even in our own country, but quite common in the Mideast. They were also to bring oil, spices for the anointing oil, and sweet incense and stones that would be set in the ephod. We haven't got to that yet, in the breastplate for the priest. And they will make for me a sanctuary, a sacred place. And so we're going to build the sanctuary, God says, that I may dwell among them. This was representative of God dwelling. The presence of God was in all places, in one sense, but there was the presence of God in the tabernacle. And there was the pillar of cloud that hung over the tabernacle that we'll talk about later, not tonight, but in other chapters, which represented God's presence with them, and where that was is where God's presence was. So there's more than one sense in which God was present. We'll talk about the mercy seat where man meets with God, and the mercy is shown. We'll get to all of that a little bit later. But let's get verse 9, then we'll go back to the badger. And you might get ready to underline, because this will be important as we make a parallel to some things in the New Testament. According to all that I will show you, that is the pattern. Underline the word pattern. You want to remember that. Of the tabernacle and the pattern of all of its furnishings, just so you shall make it. Now let's start with verse 9, then we'll go back and comment on badgers. What do you learn from the pattern? God said, I want you to build this, the tabernacle, according to the pattern. All right, this is not according to what they wish. It's not making it according to their plan. God doesn't give them, I want you to build me a place for worship. I want you to build me a place for your sacrifice. I want you to build me a tabernacle, but you build it like you wish. God had a pattern. Now, let's get ahead of ourselves in a couple of ways. Let's jump over to verse 40. This is, again, talking about the furnishings that we're going to end the chapter on. And this has to do with the building and making of the lampstand, but get ready to underline it. Verse 40, see that you make them according to the pattern. Now, let's jump on over to Hebrews chapter 8 and verse 5, and here's the practical observation about that. We're going to learn something from Hebrews 8 about the value of knowing this information in the Old Testament. And so why do I need to know about the tabernacle? We don't live under that. We don't have a tabernacle. We're not supposed to go to the tabernacle. We don't go to the temple. Forget all that. I don't need to know any of that. All right, let's go to Hebrews chapter 8, beginning at verse 3. Let's start at verse 5. Who served the copy and shadow of heavenly things as Moses was divinely instructed when he's about to make the tabernacle. That's what's going on now. It's where we are. For he said, see that you make all things according to the pattern that was shown you on the mountain. What's the point that the Hebrew writer is making? The point he's making is that the things of the Old Testament, the tabernacle and all of their service, the priesthood, was a copy or a shadow or a pattern of the greater to come. New Testament era. Make sense? And the model, if you so please, had to be made according to the pattern. If that's true, how much more so, finish my sentence. Yeah, the real and the true. You've heard me illustrate many times that if you had the blueprint for building a house and you go to a model maker and you tell the model maker, I want you to build it just like, I know it's to scale, but I want you to build it just like the pattern says. And then you go to your builder to build your real house. Do you tell him to build it anyway? No. If you are meticulous about the model, how much more so the real and the true? Make sense? That's the point of Hebrews 5. So God had a pattern. Let's go back to the badgers just for a moment. There's some question as to what that referred to. What was a badger? It seems to be some kind of sea creature. Your footnote may say dolphin or porpoise or a seal. In fact, the American Standard Version translates it a seal. So it may have been seal skin, may have been a dolphin skin or porpoise skin. In fact, the New American Standard 95 uses the word porpoise. So what was it? I don't know. It seems to be, most scholars agree that it had something to do with some water animal, some sea creature. And so what was it? Well, it was some kind of sea creature, and take the skin from that, and that's all I think we probably need to know about that. All right, any questions or comments? All right, let's talk about the Ark of the Covenant here, mentioned in our context. And we're going to look at the Ark itself and then the mercy seat. And so let's see what we know about the Ark. Now, we're going to be giving some descriptions of sizes, and we'll talk about that. And if you make marginal notes, unless your translation has already translated that for you from a cubic, we'll give the dimensions in inches so we can kind of get a perspective of that. All right, let's talk about the ark itself. You'll make an ark of acacia wood. So what size was this to be? Let's first give it in cubics, and then we'll translate that. 2.5 cubits in length. Its width and a cubic and a half height. A cubit is 18 inches. So for a visual, this is 18 inches. That's a cubit. Some argue that it goes 21, but most scholars think they go with 18. So across the board, probably 80%, 70%, 75% would say, and I'm just guessing at that, would say 18 inches. So that's a cubit. So translated to that, we'll talk about a cubic several times. That would be 45 inches long, 27 inches wide, and 27 inches high. Now, every good carpenter carries a tape measure with him. So, including, and I do, even though I'm not a good carpenter. 45 inches. So it's this long right here, between my fingers. That's how long, to give you a visual, the Ark of the Covenant was. 27 inches. It's this wide and this tall. So it's pretty good size. Got the picture? All right, here's a visual of the Ark of the Covenant. What else do we know about the making of the Ark of the Covenant? All right, they're going to overlay it with pure gold. Then they're going to do what else? All right. There will be that around the perimeter. Four rings, such as represented here. You won't find two pictures that are the exact, but there's going to be four rings. And what are those rings for? All right, these poles are made of what? Acacia wood and covered with gold. And they are going to be used for carrying it. And what do they do with them when they take them out? They don't take them out. They're not to be removed. And so that's how they transport the ark. So did they always transport the ark with that? No, they should have, but they didn't. Case with Uzzah in 2 Samuel chapter 6. All right. And what's going to go in that? Verse 16. Yeah, the testimony, that is, the tablets of stone. Now, we don't learn here, but we're going to learn elsewhere. There was a pot of manna, and what else? Aaron's rod that budded, and the tablets of stone that went into that Ark of the Covenant. So that's what goes inside, but now we haven't got yet. Just assume we don't see the cherubim on top. We don't see the lid. All we've seen is a box that's the size we just described, overlaid with gold, and that's the Ark of the Covenant. Now, there's something else that takes place. So let's go to verse 17 through 22. 17 through 22 is dealing with the mercy seat, or a description of that which covered, or the lid, to the Ark of the Covenant. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about mercy seat here just for a moment. You'll see it, verse 17, you might underline the word mercy, words, mercy seat. You see it again at verse 20, covering of the mercy seat. And let's talk about that word that's translated mercy seat. The word literally means, that's one word that is translated mercy seat. Not two words, but one word. The word that is translated mercy seat, lexicographers, Hebrew lexicographers say it means atonement. Or it can mean propitiation. Sound familiar? Should. Very familiar to New Testament students. Now, Hebrews 9 and 15 talks about this mercy seat. Not something like the mercy seat, but the literal mercy seat of the Old Covenant. Talking about this right here. He's talking about this mercy seat, the lid to the Ark of the Covenant. And now we have a Greek word translated mercy seat. That same word is translated in Romans 3:25 as propitiation. Christ is our propitiation. See a connection? There is something about Christ being our propitiation, our atonement. He is our mercy seat. Now, here's a description of the mercy seat. Let's get ahead of ourselves, and we'll come back to this. We'll get the other details. But look at verse 22. There I will meet with you. I will speak with you from above the mercy seat. This is where man meets with God. Now, we're not told here, but it was at this mercy seat where we'll see in Leviticus, where when the high priest brings the blood of the animal in, he takes it and sprinkles it on the mercy seat. Make sense? This is where man meets with God. This is where man's atonement is made. This is where propitiation is made. Is that making sense? All right. Let's get the other descriptions that are made in the context. There are going to be two cherubim of gold. How do they set? What do we know about how they set? To tell us that this is a pretty accurate description of that. Their wings are touching, they're facing each other, but they're looking down as witness to what's taking place where man meets with God. Now, verse 21 says you'll put the testimony in that, which you'd already mentioned. What else did I want to mention? Let's flag a couple of references here for what it's worth. Let's go to chapter 30 and in verse 6. You might write that in the margin of your text. That'll be helpful for future study. Chapter 30 and in verse 6. And he talks here about that you should put it before the veil, that is, before the ark of the testimony, before the mercy seat that is over the testimony, where I will meet with you. Same point. All right. Another reference we might make in connection is Numbers chapter 7 and verse 89. It's a long chapter. That Moses went to the tabernacle of meeting to speak with him and heard a voice of one speaking to him from above the mercy seat that was in the Ark of the Covenant. On the Ark of the Covenant from between the two cherubim, thus he spoke to him. Well, that's what God said he would do. There I will speak with you. And Moses went in, and there God spoke with him. All we're learning, though, is about the furnishings. We're not learning all the details of use. Question: Ark of the Covenant. All right, let's talk about the table of showbread, which is next. And what do we know about the table of showbread? How big is it? What's the dimensions? All right. Very good. Translated, that is 36 inches long. So, and I know that I may be insulting some of you by giving measurements, but some people, you can tell them a foot and they don't know if it's this long or if it's a mile. I know that by building stuff. 36 inches long. So we're right here between my fingers. That's how long the table of showbread is. How wide was it? 1 cubic, which is 18. That's how wide the table is. And how high is it? 27 inches high from my thumb to the end of that tape measure. That's about 3 inches shorter than your kitchen table, which should be 30. So anyway, that gives you kind of the idea. Now, what else do we know about the description of the table of showbread? Made of acacia wood. There's gold molding around. What are they going to do about transporting it? Same principles. 4 rings, poles made of acacia wood, overlaid with gold. They're going to carry it. Now then, let's skip verse 29. We're coming back. I want to save that for a little more comment. And you shall set the showbread on the table before me always. This is the table on which the showbread set. Now come back to verse 29. We're not skipping it completely. It's to me a difficult verse, and every commentator I consulted struggles to nail down some things, but we'll get to that. So this doesn't tell me anything about the table of showbread, of its use and its purpose. But you may be reading from the English Standard, and it doesn't say showbread. It talks about the bread of presence. The bread of presence. And you've always heard of the bread of showbread. You say, well, that's a mistranslation. No, it's not a mistranslation at all. In fact, the New Century says the same thing. The New American Standard 95 says something very similar. And it is the bread of presence. And it doesn't represent God's presence. I don't think it represents God's presence with his people, but his people's presence before him. Does that make sense? God's presence is represented in the most holy place. This represents, because we're not told here, but what's sitting on the table? 12 loaves of bread that represented the 12 tribes. That's the children of Israel. And so it seems to represent by the bread of presence, this is a reminder of they are in the presence of God. Does that make sense? It is the bread of presence, the bread that is the showbread. Now let's look at Leviticus 24 just as a little connection. We're not going to get every detail. We don't have time to do that. We're going to learn more about each one of these elements. But Leviticus 24 verses 5 to 9, we learn what goes on the table. And so there will be 12 cakes, that's the bread we're talking about, and 2 rows, 6 in a row. So that's why we have represented here six loaves and 6 loaves. And there was to be changed out every Sabbath, and this would be for an everlasting covenant. But notice verse 8, every Sabbath you shall set it before me and be taken from the children of Israel. And it shall be for Aaron and his son, they shall eat it in the holy place. From the offering of the Lord made by fire, by a perpetual statute. Again, we have the idea, I think, of God's them being in the presence of God. That's the idea, I think. Now, you may disagree and have at that as you wish. We've got to talk about verse 29, what verse 29 is about. And you say, well, I see a little difference. The table of showbread, the bread, but there looks like something has been added to that. And so the reason for this picture being that way is because of verse 29. We don't talk much about verse 29 or the contents. That in the discussion of the table of presence or table of showbread, you'll make dishes, its pans, and its pitchers and its bowls for pouring. And you should make that of pure gold. So, as I often say, what is that? And the answer is, I don't know for sure. And I'm not sure I know anybody that does know for sure. But we have some good conjecture, I think. Several think that the dishes may have reference to something that the bread sat upon, not just the table, but some kind of plate. that the pitchers and the bowls for pouring may have been for the drink offering. Can I prove that? No. That's why I called it conjecture. That's just a possibility. Others think that it may be for the use with incense. Chapter 37 of the same book, Exodus 37, and in verse 16, he mentions these again, but we don't have much more information there. So this is not really going to help us, just kind of a cross-reference, where he talks about the table of showbread. You're going to overlay it with pure gold and the utensils that were on the table, its dishes, its cups, its bowls, and pitcher for pouring. For drink offering? Maybe. Was incense involved in some of those elements? Maybe. I'm going to have to leave it at that because I'm going to have to start making up some stuff to say much more. So I don't know what else to say about that. I don't know. I just don't know. Insight? Is there a passage I've missed? I don't mean that as a challenge, but if maybe I've overlooked and there's one over in Leviticus that you flagged and you say, here's your explanation, and I've just missed it. I don't know. I don't know what to do with those. There was something there on the table beside just the bread, I take, because of this verse and because of chapter 37. Or Leviticus 24, rather. No, not Leviticus 24, but Exodus 37. All right, let's go further. Let's talk about the lampstand. Now, what's interesting, what's missing in the description of the lampstand that we would like to know? Everything else we've seen, the size. There's no description of the size. So how what was the description? How wide was this? How tall did it stand? I don't know. That may be that it either wasn't revealed to us, or that may be one of those areas where God left it to the people to choose as he would leave things for us to choose. He told us to go preach, but didn't tell us how to go. We can walk, we can ride, we can do whatever. But anyway, be that as it may, we're going to make a lampstand. So what's it going to be made of? It's going to be made out of gold. So they're going to melt the gold and pour it, right? No, it's not going to be poured. You're right. It's going to be hammered. And so this is going to be a hammered work. And so it's going to look something like this. Or perhaps this one's even better. So let's talk about these descriptions here for what it may be worth and try to get through those quickly. There's some discussion as to what the bowls have reference to, or the knobs have reference to, rather, not the bowls. But in essence, what we're seeing, I'm looking for a statement here. In verse 33, talks about the almond blossom. In other words, there's to be this lampstand, the central stand, and there would be flowers hammered out on that. What comes out from that? He mentions there had to be three branches on either side. So you had three branches coming out on one side and three on the other. It mentions the almond flower, perhaps something looking like one of these almond flowers. Then at the top there would be something to contain oil, so for burning. What was the purpose of the lampstand? Not really a lot said about that, but there, verse 37, just to give light, because the tabernacle is going to be covered and it's for the giving of light. Now, it was a pretty good size, and I don't know much more to say about the description of that other than what you read right here, but this is a pretty good description, a pretty good artist rendition of what this said. What did it look like exactly? We don't know. I don't know the size. I don't know how the branches came out, but that's a pretty good representation of looking at an artist rendering of that. But let's go to verse 39. It was made of a talent of pure gold. That's about 75 pounds. Pretty hefty lampstand. So did that include some of the utensils that were described at verse 39? Or did that include this, the lampstand itself? I don't know. But 75 pounds of gold is a pretty hefty piece of work, I'm going to tell you. But that's the lampstand, and we'll talk about its location here in a minute. All right, now we have already flagged verse 40. This is to be done what? According to the pattern. All right, let's go to chapter 26. So let's see if we can get through the tabernacle, the description of the tabernacle, its sizes, its description, etc. So I want to start with this, and you're going to come back. We're not leaving that outline, but I do want to flag right here that we're going to look at four coverings first. There's the inner layer, there's the outer layer, and then there's the skin coverings, plural. So that makes four. Make sense? We're going to talk about those four first, then we'll come to the boards and the bars. Let's get a picture of the size of that we're going to see just by way of perspective. This is the court of the tabernacle. The description is not given right here, but we'll get to that later, which would be, I'm right down here, at 150 feet long. This is not the tabernacle itself. This is the court of the tabernacle and 75 feet wide. But the tabernacle itself would be 45 feet long and 15 feet wide. So can you imagine 15 feet? Where I'm standing, it's 13 feet 1 inch from the floor to the ceiling, right here. It's a little more down further. It's more shallow going up. It's 12 feet back there where you're sitting on the back row. So 13:1. So add a couple of other feet to this, and this would, if you were standing beside the tabernacle, it goes bigger than from here to the ceiling. That's pretty good size. And 45 feet long. Now, to make a comparison, this is the American football field, 160 feet wide, 300 feet long. Am I right about that? I think I'm not a sports fan. I believe that's right. Anyway, gives you a perspective of the size of the tabernacle itself. So when we talk about the court of the tabernacle, we're talking about this outer court that we'll get to later. That's not mentioned in our text tonight. We're looking at the tabernacle itself right here in our description. So let's talk about what we see in chapter 26. There's first of all verses 1 to 6 that we've looked at in our, of the, there's this inner layer of the curtain. Now, what I want you to notice is these layers. You see the four layers starting right here. There's the first layer and the second and the third and then the top one, which is the fourth. Those layers of curtain, that inner layer, let's talk about that inner layer. A little closer look at that. That's not the one I want. Let's come a little bit further, right here. All right. This inner layer, what's it made of? It's made of fine linen thread, blue and purple. And as they weave it together, what are they to put in it? Cherubim, you shall weave in them. So how big is that to be? They're to make five curtains that are 42 feet by 6 feet. That's pretty good size. And you're making five of them. And what are they going to do with those five? Put them together. And then they're going to make another five. And what are they going to do with that? They're going to put them together. Now, you might take notice of this. There's some significance, I think, to this. At verse 6, they're going to clasp them all together with all of their loops that they may be one tabernacle. Think that says anything about unity and harmony? This is one. This is not divided. That it's one tabernacle. We're putting it all together. So that's that first layer. So this is the layer we're talking about right here. Now, we're going to come back to these acacia boards in a minute, but this is the layer that goes on first. And so it covers from the back all the way. This is turned back so you can see. That's not how far it went. If you got a picture, it covers the whole thing. But that's the first one, and it has that design in that, and that lays over and covers the tabernacle. It's only 42 feet. So let's go to the next one now. The next one, beginning at verse 7, the second layer. This is the outer layer, but it's not the final layer. This is the outer layer of the linen. What's it made of? Goat's hair. What size are the panels to be made? Same width, 6 feet, 45 feet long. Means it goes longer, goes further. So notice a little bit of this representation that this one, this is the one we're talking about right here, and it's coming down a little bit further. So it covers more. and it's made of goat's hair. And they were to put them together. All right? And they were to put it on one side and on the other. By the way, for what it's worth, always remember when you're looking at the tabernacle, this, that's not what I want. This right here is the entrance way. We'll get to that in a moment. And this side over here is always to what direction? To the north. It's always to the north. Actually, the north is this way, isn't it? I believe. Anyway, it's always facing north. Make sense? So they entered on the east side. Always that went to the north. All right. Now let's go to the next one. Verse 14 only mentions two. There's only one verse given to these two. So here are these skins that are made of, covering that's made of ram skins dyed red for the tent. And then there is a covering of badger skins above that. Now, I want to go back just for a moment. That second layer was, it was to be made not of 10 panels, but of how many? Well, I don't have a representation of this on the screen. I couldn't find one. It was made of one more panel. There were 11 panels put together, wasn't it? And so that 11th panel, instead of hanging over the front, was to be turned back and doubled on the front of the tabernacle. Remember that? So you put down the first covering, the second covering, turn that panel back. Now we're ready for the ram skins covering, dyed red, and then the badger skins, whatever that was. And if it's a sea animal, it would make sense, though the text doesn't tell us, some conjecture, so warning, this is a little bit of conjecture, there's going to be some protection from water in the rain. If it's dolphin or seal skins, would make sense. And so that's the final layer that goes on that. Now, that's the preparation of making that, but they don't have anything to put it on yet. So he's going to give them instructions about that. Let's get to that. So starting at verse 16 now, verse 15 rather, they're the boards and the bars. All right, let's get the boards and the bars. Went the wrong way there. Here we go. I'm not sure this is the best representation, but this is a pretty fair representation of these boards. So let's get the picture of the boards. Each one of these acacia boards, now, I know we're flipping back and forth, but these are the boards we're talking about right here, that they're put together, and we'll see how many they were. In fact, let's get that. The size of them were 15 feet high. Again, that's 2 feet longer than standing right here. We'd poke a hole 2 more feet through the roof. All right? Through this ceiling, rather. And they were 27 inches wide. How many boards are they going to make? Verse 19, they're to be 18 and 19. 20 boards for one side, for the south side. 20 boards for the north side. And how many for the back? 6 boards for the back. Verse 23 adds 2 more boards for the corners. I take it that it's something like this right here. See how this is doubled up at the corner? And then there was a gold ring, what was it called? It's not a gold socket that would hold those together. This is movable. They're not securing these permanently because this is a tabernacle. This is a tent. They're going to move it. Take it down, move it. Take it down, move it. Take it down, move it, kind of thing. All right. So what else we want to mention? Oh, notice the sockets. Verse 25. I put this here because very few drawings of the tabernacle show anything about the sockets. This little area right here, this little white stuff down here, is probably supposed to be the representation of the sockets. The sockets had something to do with standing up these boards. I don't think this is an accurate representation, but it talks about tenons. What's a tenon, Jared? You're a woodworker. What's a tenon? It's a joint. It's a protrusion out from the wood that slips into something else, slips into a hole somewhere. Well, this artist has put the tenon on the side, so they're joint, but the indication seems to be the two tenons were at the bottom to go into the socket made of silver. Does that make sense? And so they put that in, and so they join the boards together. All right? So they have 20 boards on the one side, 20 on the other. Now, let's drop down to verse Let's see, verse 30. You might get ready to underline. You're going to raise the tabernacle according to its pattern, right there. All right, let's go further. Now, there are, before we get through with verse, let's back up. I jumped ahead of myself. Let's get to verse 26. There's something else about this, the walls of this before they cover it. What do they got on them? They're going to put bars for the boards, one side and then the other. And so every artist draws a little bit different picture. This and there's one right through the middle that goes from end to end. So there's to be five bars. This artist put two at one end, two at the other end, and then this one goes down the middle. Well, I know the one down the middle goes from side to side, and he did the same thing here. Is that the way it was? I'm not sure. But there were five bars on each side that they hold this together, and then they take it back down for transportation. Quite an elaborate setup. Let's see now, beginning at verse 31, what are we seeing? There's the veil. What's it made of? All right. Yeah, this is, it's made of blue and purple scarlet yarn and fine linen. Very good. And what's going to be on it, verse 31? Design of the cherubim. We're talking about this veil right here that separates the holy place. This is the holy place wherein we have the lampstand. Now, we haven't talked about the altar of incense yet. We'll get to that later, so just ignore it. We have the lampstand, we have the table of showbread, and the Ark of the Covenant. And so what separated the most holy place from the holy place was this veil. Who could go through the veil? The high priest. No one else could go through there. All right. Now it was to be hung. This veil was to be hung. How? With upon four pillars of acacia wood. So there's four pillars. In other words, think of them as columns or posts that go across there that they hang this curtain or veil. Now, let me stop here. What happened? Now, this is not the tabernacle. This is not what was standing. What you're seeing on this picture, this is not what was standing. This was gone. A temple was built. They put a veil. That was gone. Finally, there's another temple and another temple built. And when Jesus died, what happened to that veil? It ripped from top to bottom, indicating the access to the most holy place is now made available through Christ. Does that make sense? So Hebrews parallels this to the church and this to heaven. He's passed into the most holy place, into heaven, to make intercession for us, etc. Make sense? All right. Let's finish up here by noticing verses 36 and 37. Now what's being built or what's being made? It's not called a veil, but it's very similar. The screen. We're talking about this right here. Right here in the front. If you can see my little dot circling, it's what covers the front. That would be basically, I'm not trying to be flippant, that's the front door to it. That's how they got in, through that veil or through that screen. And so they're going to make a screen. What's it going to look like? Yeah, it looks very similar to the veil. It's not the veil. It's not the same thing, but it looks very similar, at least in color. And they're going to make the screen on five pillars of acacia wood. Now, these little short pieces here are just cut off for our visual, but picture these pillars or posts or columns of acacia wood, five of them going across there, and that's going to hold up this screen that allows them to go through. And there's going to be sockets of bronze for them to set up on. All right. Questions or comments? Our time is about gone. Anything practical that you learn from these chapters? Good point. I'm glad you mentioned that, because much of what they've building this from was taken from Egypt. They also took some spoils from the Amalekites. And then we're talking about in excess of 1 million people who've been able to acquire from just their labor, et cetera, through their work, et cetera. They've been able to acquire some, but most of it did come out of Egypt when they took the spoil, and now they have the things to build the tabernacle of God. All right, we're going to stop. Go ahead.